Mikasa.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Sister C, your own Sister C, here in the place to be, as you know. Today, we are going back to something that we've done a few times, and it's called a 3P2C interview. And one of the first and oldest people to do that type of interview is Neil Ryan. He's our guest today. But before going a little too fast, we're going to have Jesse present our land acknowledgement.
Thank you, Charlotte. Today's show is produced on the unceded and ancestral territories of the Hunkaminam and Squamish-speaking peoples.
And here we have our featured guest, Neil Ryan, who represents all three of the things we're talking about. He has a new project. He's got a lot of passion. He has a purpose. Neil, and you have an interesting idea about age. So tell us a little bit about your project and passion.
Hi, Charlotte. Wonderful to see you again.
Yes, you have a new project, and you have a lot of passion behind it. And part of the thing that's amazing to me about your new project is your age. You are going into 85, but what do you? You have a kind of thing that you feel about age.
Well, my thing about age is that we've been lied to that in fact that we're old at certain age and so forth, and but hey, I got a body that's fully functional, and I don't have any aches and pains anywhere. So is that because of my belief, or is that because of my diet? I'm an omnivore. I don't have no special diet. I do belong to the senior mobility program at University of British Columbia. They give me a schedule of when I need to exercise. I try to do that. They have me going for a 2K walk every day. But I'm happy if I get 3 days a week. Even 2 days a week that I get to do my UBC exercise. It's at the University Hospital in downtown Vancouver. So the bottom line of all of it is that you are what you believe. And when I was 82 and took my motorhome south for the winter, I realized that it's what you believe that's important. What you believe in the inside. It's not just simply positive thinking. It's what is behind that. What is the bottom line belief about who you are and how you are? And that trip taught me that what's important is what you believe, because that's, and I'm learning that quantum physics tells me that your mind manifests. Hey, we can go back to 3,000 years when the Buddha was around, and the Buddha's words are, all that you are arises from your thoughts. Mm-hmm. With your thoughts, you make the world. So it's not just what you force yourself to believe. It's what you really, truly have written in stone in the wall, in the wall in your mind.
Now, speaking of what you've written and encased in the wall of your mind, you mentioned going down into the States, but that would lead us an opportunity for you to share what your project is, because you have persevered more than many people to get that project going. Tell us a bit about your project.
Well, Well, as a matter of fact, the way I went south into the U.S. was to promote my book that's called From the Other Side. Now, From the Other Side is a collection of 60 poems and 3 short stories based on the idea that it's difficult to be a human being in this world. And it's got 60 poems, 3 short stories, several, I think it's around 40 haiku, which are just 3-line poems. And they're not exactly, technically, they're not a haiku. A few of them are. But most of them are just anecdotes, just little thinking about life. And there's a few, very few quotes from poets. But this 4 lines basically says what is really interesting, because this book is written about love. And here's a quote from Rumi, who's a Persian poet from the 1200s. And that is, "Through love, all that is bitter will be sweet. Through love, all that is copper will be gold. Through love, all dregs will become wine. And through love, all pain will become medicine." And that's really the intent of this book, is to carry that message out into the world. And I will probably wind up reading a poem or two, but that basically carries the message that I'm trying to convey through my book called From the Other Side.
And one of the messages that comes from that book, your process with the book, is when you first, well, a lot of people are told, you know, if by 50, if you haven't written a book or got it published, then it's over and done. But you persisted through what age? What age were you when you published that?
I was 76 when I wrote my first poem. I did write one poem the day my father died, and it's actually in that book. But I didn't do anything else from when I was, 37 till I was almost 77. So, make a long story short, is that this became, how do I get the words of wisdom that are powered through me? And that's why it's called From the Other Side, is because all these poems these 60 poems they're all given to me from the other side, and I have no idea what that is. But to get back to your question, my current project is that I have another book called The Brighton Tarot Card Mystery, and it's at the printer. The galley proofs have been sent back to them with the corrections, so in the next 2 weeks, they say there should be a week from now, they'll send me the revised galleys, and a week from then, the book will be at the publisher, at the printer. So it's called The Brighton Tarot Card Mystery. And back, I was maybe 5 years ago. Michelle is my best friend, and she was busy with not only doing another master's degree, but she had a full-time job. And I said, I'm going to England for 6 months. I'll be back. We were living in Montreal at the time, and I took off to go to England. And what I was after was my father was born in England, so I wanted a British passport. I don't know why, but anyway, there was another adventure all on its own. I went off to England to get my father's passport, my passport, courtesy of my father. And I'm sitting on the beach, and somebody comes along and sits down beside me. I'm literally just sitting there minding my own business. And this woman begins to ask a whole bunch of questions. What am I doing here? Who am I? Where am I from? Yada, yada, yada. And when she got up to leave, I said, I'm wondering what the next adventure is. And she turned and looked at me and said, write a book. Mm-hmm. So I took that as advice and started writing a poem that's in this book. And it's called The Church with No Windows, No Doors, and No Roof.
I remember you shared that poem with us once. I think it was close to Remembrance Day. But yes, share that.
The church with no roof. A boy stood at the doorway of the church with no roof. It also had no windows. It also had no doors. The walls still stood, but between them lay the rubble. Just yesterday, it was a whole church with a roof and windows and doors. He had walked by here just yesterday on his way to school, as he does every day on his way to school. Just yesterday, it was a whole church with a roof and windows and doors. Just yesterday, his world was a whole world that had roofs and windows and doors. Just yesterday, he had a father that he proudly marched alongside as the soldiers, two by two, passed by the church and boarded their train to fate. But this day is different. The church has no roof, and he no longer secure where his father is. Just yesterday, his pride was whole, with the certainty of a roof and windows and doors. Mother says he will be safe in the underground, but he feels his mother's fear, fear that teaches him to be afraid of those he knows not. The confusion of emotion with the love for some and vengeful rage at others. He dare not think they hate him so and wish his family dead. But yesterday, his emotions were whole with a roof and windows and doors. He had a place inside where he hails the fear-filled feelings. The uncertainty of existence must not show. He dare not think what horrors might befall him as he sleeps. He dare not ask, why do the others hate us so? When just yesterday, his love was whole with a roof and windows and doors. His fleeting thoughts. I don't want my dad to be dead. I don't want the bombs to hurt my mom. I need to protect her. There is only one mother and one father allowed per family. All the rest are strangers. And just yesterday, he had his family was whole with a roof and windows and doors. He lives on a street where the houses have roofs and windows and doors to keep out the dampness and the cold. Just yesterday, he had a mom and a dad to holiday with and to be safe. But today brings the knowledge his world has been bombed. Where just yesterday, this world was whole with roofs and windows and doors. It's the same world, but his view has been shattered. this child's soul has been hurt. The world is now unsafe. It is a place where bombs are dropped, and with the intention to kill and destroy. Just yesterday, this church was a whole church with a roof and windows and doors. For a moment, I was that boy as I stood before the entrance to the church in Portsmouth, England, thinking of the child who stood in this experience of here, of learning at the entrance to the church with no roof and no windows and no doors, standing in front of any church or temple or mosque, and imagine it with no roof and no windows and no doors. Imagine a boy or a girl in that, of any nation, in any culture, in any language, standing there, where just yesterday, for them, their world was whole with roofs and windows and doors.
Wow, you took us to that place. I wonder, you know, people tell people who want to write a whole lot of rules. You know, you have to stick with this style, stick with that style. But in your book, there's a compilation of different styles. You say, who taught you to write like that? Or who gave you permission to write like that? Does something come from the other side and talk to you when you're sleepy?
I wish. I earn my living by doing, I'll put quotation marks around, by doing consulting work. So when Simon Fraser decided to, one of the professors would invite, would invent a new something, a new breathing mask for ambulance drivers to be able to revive people. They would want to know what's the value of this in a commodity type world. And I would do a management consulting job for them to say, oh, okay, that's what this is worth, and this is where the market is, and this is what the competition is. And so I did that with governments, with businesses, with UBC. I did it with the Alberta government. I did it with the BC government. I did it. That's how I earn my living. And to be able to convey some innovation, I learned how to write documents to convey information. And so when I started writing poetry and I had an idea of what it was that I was going to share, I learned from my experience of giving people information, I learned how to give information so they understood. So I many times got compliments from my clients about how clearly the information was conveyed to them. And so I that was my job. I wanted to convey good, solid information and not just praise a product because the inventor was a nice guy.
Okay, well, it seems as part of your passion is to turn on the permission in other people to feel that you don't have to be this style, because there are many different styles of writing within your book, but to give permission to yourself to let the words that something wants to come through, whether it's from the other side, whether it's from a class that you've taken, but you really seem to be passionate about turning the keys that unlock people's willingness to talk about and share their stories.
Charlotte, what I learned to write is as though I was having a conversation. Because when we have a conversation, my intention is that you understood what I'm trying to convey to you. That's important to me. And so with that as the belief that says, I need to convey these ideas, these thoughts, I need to convey them so that my recipient can hear. I'm not trying to impress them with big words and complicated sentences. I'm trying to get them to understand what it is I'm trying to say. And in that idea of conveying the information to the person, so what I have in my mind right at the outset is, how do I get the person that I'm chatting with to get to understand my intention, my idea? And in doing so, I have many compliments about my writing, is because I'm trying to convey myself to them so that they understand. So I'm not smarter or anything. I'm just trying to make sure that they understand my point of view or my idea or my thoughts. And gratefully, the muse that gives me the poems, the muse that sends me the words and that I write down, gratefully is she understands. That's my intention, is to be understood. So
one of the things, you know, that's also unusual about From the Other Side is that it has stories, and part of your process was entering competitions. Could you share, I think there was one about ghosts. There were so many interesting stories, but can you tell how that connects with your process? Because it's a small book, but it feels like it's a volume, just volumes of experiences and suggestions.
Well, it's 100 pages, so you're right. It's a small book, but I wasn't trying to create a tome. I was trying to get my thoughts out into the world. But the question that you're asking about is the Brighton Tarot Card Mystery. Is that there's one novelette? It's 2,000 words. So it's the first 30 pages of the book from the Brighton Tarot Card Mystery. But then there's 12 short stories, and I'd say 9 of the 12 were entries into a poetry contest and were restricted by the rules of the contest to 900 words mostly. Some of the poems of the 9 that were contest applications, contest entries, some of them are 700. One of them is 750, and a couple of them are 800, but most of them are just shy of 900 words. And they are a full range of topics.
I did want to say, when you mentioned you were in these contests, a lot of us have experienced false contests. They collect people's stuff. But Writers Weekly is the source that has had this annual contest where people have 24 hours to write sometimes a story, sometimes it's a poem. So Neil is going to be sharing one of those that was included. It was a winner in the contest, and then it was also included in this new book.
The Brighton Tarot Card Mystery is only short stories. The contest is quarterly. I also entered the CBC has a writer's contest, both in a short story and poetry, and I've entered them as well. But not all of them were winners, but they were all good stories. So I put them together along with the novelette, which is the story, The Brighton Tarot Card Mystery. which is a delightful romp through Brighton, England, as a police detective trying to track down the thief of a deck of tarot cards, and it winds up at the end when the story winds up offering a spiritual look at the idea of tarot and the fact that tarot is really a reliable methodology of understanding the field. And quantum physics, to get a little bit scientific, quantum physics says every experience is a field, and it's the energy of the field that dictates the anyway, you have to look that one up, because I just know from my work with intention that when you create the intention, you create the opportunity for the field to manifest your intention. And that's really an exciting field that I'm currently exploring as I learn more about the field of tarot cards and its ability to provide information. That's all tarot is. It's like the I Ching, the Chinese, which I really love. I love the Chinese I Ching. It's called, that's the coins, and but that's totally off topic. So let's go back to the Brighton Tarot Card Mystery. Is about tarot and the ability to use to predict outcomes. But what you were referring to is a poem that I wrote I belong to a poetry group out of Michigan, and I think you know about the Blue Water Poetry. I read a poem to the group last night. It's on every week, and I would like to share it with you.
Okay.
If you, the poem is called "On the Day That I Die." On the day that I die, I want it to be raining, a slow, gentle rain, one that nurtures and softens the receptive earth, so that the energy of my love will penetrate deeply into the soil. On the day that I die, I want the softened Mother Earth to accept my love in appreciation for all the gifts that nurtured, clothed, and sheltered me in all the forms it bestowed upon me in this lifetime. On the day that I die, I want one of my books to be a bestseller, not for the fame and fortune it will bring, but for the love and compassion they share in this time of need for love and compassion. On the day that I die, I want all of my friends and loved ones to be deep in their own experience of adventure, ones that teach them to be grateful in this self-inflicting wounding called life. On the day that I die, I want the rope that ties me to this existence to sever easily and quickly, without drama and pain, far away from the sound and fury that echoes throughout this passion play. On the day that I die, I want to remember the log cabin